This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, March 1st, 2021. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio just north of New York City, and working from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut, Taylor Schwenk. And Taylor, you were playing hurt today. We didn't get into it too much the other day, but surgery on Friday, right?
Yep. Got all four of my wisdom teeth taken out, sliced open. I'm feeling okay right now, kind of sore. I might have, had a cortisone injection before we hopped on just to be able to play through the pain. But it's been a little bit of a rocky weekend, so I'm glad I can, at least get through this podcast. I'll be taking a nap as soon as I'm done with all my activities here this morning. And actually, wanted to play for this for you guys. And if enough Bleacher Tweeters listeners cajole me, maybe I'll release the video. But this is a quick bite of me post-op sitting on my couch staring blankly into the television screen.
What do you think you want to watch?
I don't know.
I don't know. My wife said I had no soul.
That was
soul
really
in my eyes.
You? That wasn't like some movie drop or something?
Nope.
What do you think you want to watch?
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Dude. My wife knows good content when she sees it. So shout out to Courtney.
I hear that and I'm like, thank God. When I was, my mom gave me money to have my wisdom teeth taken out. And then I went to the dentist and said, all four of your wisdom teeth are in. I should be thankful for that. Like the teeth gods work for me after hearing that. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm sorry you're going through that. I tell you what, today when we do the Bleacher Tweets, I'm reading the questions myself. So it's the last time you have to talk. How does that sound?
Appreciate it, man. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. We're just 31 days away from opening day. Incredibly, yesterday, the first exhibition games of 2021, and these are some of the sounds, and you're going to hear in the background fans. How cool is that? Fans in the stands. The Orioles, Trey Mancini, got a standing ovation in his first plate appearance and single. Let's give a listen to that.
First baseman, number 63, CD.
That's really cool. Trey Mancini, of course, coming back from his fight with cancer last year. He was very moved. We're going to hear from him later in the podcast. We'll also hear from Tim Kirchen about Trey Mancini. Buster Posey coming back this year. People wondering if this might be his last season. Here was his first plate appearance.
So here's Buster. And the pitch. Swinging a line drive to right field, a base hit. So Buster not impressed with that 91 mile an hour breaking ball, and he's aboard. First hit for the Giants.
That, of course, the voice of the great Dwayne Kuiper. I loved hearing him as much as I do the fans. Kesson here of the Brewers, getting off to a great start in spring training.
Ready to work is Mike Wright. Checks his two runners, and the pitch home. Swinging a high fly, deep left field. Way back, it is gone. Welcome back, Kesson Hira, a three-run home run in the top of the first, and the Brewers take a 3-0 lead on the White Sox. A walk, a single, and a missile. And that got out in a hurry for Kesson Hira.
Here was Kevin Biggio, the Toronto Blue Jays.
The 0-2. Sky deep into left center field, giving chase is Frazier. It's over his head. That'll go up against the wall. Davis will score easily. And Biggio is at second with an RBI double. It's 3-0 Toronto.
That was Michael Kay on the Yes Network, and something else jumped out at me. Besides Kevin Biggio getting the hit, Clint Frazier taking an ugly route on that ball, which is going to be a question, as it was last year when his defense got a lot better. And there was some defense from Kyle Schwarber in the Nationals game.
Looking around to see who's moving. That is not a good feeling.
O'Neill went down to get it, and a base hit into left field. They're going to wave in Kisner, and the throw to the plate is in time, and they got him. A strong throw from left.
That from the Cardinals television network. Some other notes. The Braves extended the contract of manager Brian Snitker through the 2023 season. You heard the other day Jeff Francoeur talk about how great Snitker and his coaching staff have been. He'd be someone who's been in the organization pretty much his whole career. Hunter Dozier and the Royals agreed to a four-year extension. San Diego Padres outfielder Tommy Pham talked with reporters, and he said he's lucky to be playing again after the stabbing that he incurred 4.5 months ago. Of quote from him that cuts deep. The doctor here basically told me if I wasn't so muscular, I might be dead or paralyzed. I'm lucky to even be able to play. And Vi Ripken, the matriarch of the famed Baltimore Orioles baseball family, died at age 82. Well, today we'll wrap up our National League East previews. Paul Severino, play-by-play man in the Marlins broadcast, will join us. Before we get to Tim and Paul, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World, available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkson.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkson covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, I just mentioned the sad news about Vi Ripken, the mother to Cal Ripken Jr. and to Billy Ripken. Obviously our condolences to the Ripken family. She was around at the ballpark from time to time in the 2 years that I covered the Orioles for the Baltimore Sun. I'm guessing you probably got to know her a little better than I did.
Yeah, I knew her pretty well. She was an amazing woman. Both Billy and Cal, who I covered for a long time, would tell me repeatedly when her mother came up, she carried our family, you know? Like, my dad taught us how to play baseball, but he was away a lot, and so were the boys, of course, but it was Vi Ripken that carried the entire family. They used to tell me she cooked, she cleaned, she'd do everything, and she'd prepare everything so her boys could go away and play. And I'll never forget, Vi told me once about Cal Jr., and this is more about Jr., but this just shows how proud she was of her children. She said, Cal Jr. never went to college, and he's the smartest person I've ever met. That's how she defined her son, that he was so understanding of how the world worked that he didn't even have to go to college to be that smart. So it was her trying to explain, even though he came straight out of high school and played pro ball, never went to college, he's smarter than everyone else. And that's how she looked at all of her kids. And she once told me, that Billy's the funniest kid I've ever met in my life. So she loved her kids. That's the whole point. And she loved her husband. And it was impossible not to love Vi Ripken once you got to know her.
Where did Billy's sense of humor come from within that family?
You know, I always thought Junior has a great sense of humor. He just doesn't show it very often. Cal Sr. made me laugh out loud a couple times, but he kept that very guarded because he's a baseball player. He doesn't want to be looked at as a character or a comedian or anything else. But I always thought that Billy was such the opposite of Junior, at least publicly, that he knew his brother had to be guarded on everything. And he would say, well, I'm not him. I'm not the player that he is. He's my best friend. So I'm going to let it come out just to show there are two sides to the Ripkens.
Speaking of the Orioles, really cool moment yesterday in the first game of exhibition games when Trey Mancini steps into the box. He gets an ovation from the crowd that is there, the socially distant crowd. It's not as big of a crowd. But that was really cool. And you know how meaningful it was to him. And you know how meaningful it was to him that he got the hit in that first plate appearance.
Yeah, it's a great story. Everyone who knows Trey Mancini knows he's a great kid. He's a local kid. I'll never forget when he made his major league debut. I happened to be at the ballpark that day, and I talked to him about growing up in Bowie and all this. And, you know, he gave the whole gratuitous, this is a dream come true. But for him, it was. And then to beat cancer the way that he has – and come back and make a plate appearance and do more than that. In the first game, that was a really, really good feel-good story with a feel-good kid. And let's just hope he can keep his strength. Let's just hope everything is gone. And let's hope he can be a good big league player again. Because let's not forget, Buster, he was a very productive player in 2019.
And let's hope that the Orioles keep him, Tim. Look, he's reached a stage in his career. If the Orioles, you know, handle him the way they've handled other players in recent years, then if he builds up some trade value, then potentially they could put him on the market before July 31st. But I really hope that the current Orioles regime gives the fans somebody to sort of wrap their order around in a way that they haven't in recent years. I hope they find a way to keep him in Baltimore.
Well, they have to, Buster. I mean, they let Adam Jones go so unceremoniously. That just wasn't right. And again, Adley Rutschman's going to be the face of this franchise sooner rather than later. But right now it's Trey Mancini. And Baltimore, as you know, Buster, is a very provincial town. And when they get one of their own, maybe not from downtown Baltimore, and maybe not from Aberdeen like the Ripkins, but you got to grab onto one guy. And Trey Mancini's that guy, not just because he's a good player, but now his story is better than ever. And we don't keep guys around because of stories, but when they produce and they're a great story and they're a local guy, that's what Baltimore's all about to me. And I hope the analytics people there recognize the human element of the Mancini story and keep him around for as long as possible.
All right, as the exhibition games get going, tell us about your week ahead.
Well, today I'm doing the Dodger thematics, so I will be interviewing all the Dodgers from my computer on Zoom here, as opposed to sitting 3 feet away from them, which is really not the way to do it, but it's our only choice here. So I've got the Dodgers today, so I'm going to ask them a bunch of questions, some of them fun questions, hopefully. And then I'm getting a new computer fixed, and I hope I can get this camera set up properly, because if I can, it will be the greatest accomplishment of my life, as they sent me some hardware, and with the help of FaceTime, I actually set it up properly. Tomorrow, I have the Rays and Red Sox game at 1 o'clock, which I can't wait for, and even though I'll be doing it from home, and Ravi will be in Connecticut, and Eduardo will be in Florida, I can't wait for that. Wednesday, I have another thematics day. Thursday, I have the Mets and the Nationals. Can't wait for that. And on Friday, I'm going to go get some blood taken in between more thematics. So I have a very, very busy week.
Jeez. Well, and I'm sure you're like I am, too, is that when you're not doing a game, you're going to be watching games and locked in and, you know, seeing all the highlights and seeing things go down and listening to the sounds of the crowd, which yesterday, that's what jumped out to me yesterday, just being so happy that while these are not, you know, crowds where the fans are packed shoulder to shoulder, we're probably still a ways from having that. But boy, to hear the fans yesterday was really great.
Yeah, I watched the Yankee game yesterday. And, you know, Buster, our spring training games this year, any year, you never look to see who wins or loses. But I was completely enthralled with the Yankee game yesterday because I hadn't seen a game in so long, of course. And the fans in the stands really made the atmosphere and the energy different. One of the many things we learned from last year is how important the fans are to the entire product. And it felt great yesterday. So I'll be watching as many games as possible today in between all my other work. And it's just so soothing for me to have a game on in the background. Even if I'm not watching every pitch, that ambient sound really helps me through.
So I wanted to get your reaction to some numbers that were in a column I wrote yesterday. And I essentially was responding to what happened, Kevin Mather of the Mariners, and writing about how, as we move forward, what a destructive situation that is going to be for that franchise, because you have Jared Kelnick. And by the way, I was alerted that I've been mispronouncing his name rather than Kelnick. It's Kelnick. Jared Kelnick, very outspoken last week about how he feels like he's had his service time manipulated. And so I kind of went big picture about this and how cancerous the non-competitive behavior is for the sport. That, you know, those fun loopholes that front offices may have felt like they found to exploit, you know, the enhance internally the financial value of these players. The sport needs to get past them, especially at a time when the players clearly are losing so much financial ground. And Paul Ambichetti's really helped me with some numbers. I also got some help from Seth Levinson, of course, as part of the Aces player agency. And the numbers, Tim, were unbelievable to me. For example, this is from Hembo. The average Major League Baseball player salary change, according to each collective bargaining agreement among the last four. From 2003 to 2006, the average player salary jumped 25%. In the CBA, 2007 to 2011, the average player salary jumped 17.9%. 2012 to 2016, it jumped 29%. In this CBA, Tim, the average player salary has dropped 0.6%. There are also really striking numbers about how players over 35 just don't get contracts the way they used to. The amount of money and the number of contracts have dropped by 20-30%, you know, during the course of this CBA versus previous ones. If you're a player, boy, you'd have to look at everything going on here and feeling like, hey, we need some adjustment here. We need some good faith restored to the game. Anything jump out at you among the numbers?
Well, the story was great, Buster, and the numbers are staggering, especially the final, hey, the numbers went down in this CBA. And the players are upset about this, and they have every right to be. Let's not forget Josh Donaldson came out and thanked Kevin Mather for saying what he said, because it is shedding a light now that the players have known all along they are suppressing us and our service time in order to pay us less money. Now, I certainly understand with some small market teams, this is their only way through, but Buster, back to the whole competitive situation. The gap right now between the really good teams and the really bad teams is by far the widest gap that I have ever seen in the 41 years that I've covered, and that's a really unhealthy situation. There's no such thing as an upset in baseball, Buster, like football and basketball. When a bad team went into Chicago Stadium and beat Jordan's Bulls, which never happened, that was a major upset. But now, but in baseball, it's beautiful that the Pirates can go in and beat the Dodgers 2 out of 3 at Dodger Stadium, and nobody really blinks. Well, you know what? Those days are over, because if the Pirates win 2 out of 3 at Dodger Stadium, we're going to go, what happened here? And that's going to take away one of the great beauties of the game. So this is where the cancer you're talking about really affects the game, because it gives off the impression that teams aren't trying to win. And what are we here for, Buster? This is all we're here for, is to try to win games. And if teams give the appearance that they're not, it's not healthy for the game.
Tim, I can remember when the Astros became the first team to go to extreme, extreme tanking. Like, there have been teams before that maybe didn't spend a lot and didn't, you know, didn't necessarily give their best effort to try. But when the Astros, that one year when they finished the season with one player making over $1 million, and they became the first team since, what, the 1962 to 65 Mets to lose 106-plus games in 3 consecutive seasons, I remember a front office person saying, wow, that's the way to do it. Like, you have to admire the fact that the Astros are going all in on the analytics. But in the last few years, I've started to definitely get a sense of discomfort on management side at the team level. I'm not going to, you know, speak to how owners feel about it, because they're the ones who are making the money. But at the team level, more, it's making, you know, general managers, assistant general managers more squeamish, where they see a situation like George Springer held one day from free agency, or Chris Bryant, a similar thing, or, you know, so many other examples of players having their service time manipulated, of tanking, of an offseason like this. And I actually had an executive who used to, when the Astros started doing what they did, used to laud the Astros, and now he's like, you know what stinks in our game? That so few teams are trying to win. which is why I think while, you know, typically I think MLB's perspective would be, look, the union, if they want adjustments, they should ask us for the adjustments and then we'll negotiate around them. I think in this case, Major League Baseball needs to be as invested in plugging these loopholes that open up non-competitive behavior as much as the union is. And I know I might be naive, I might be idealistic, but I really feel like for the integrity of the game, for the integrity of the sport, it's important that baseball get Major League Baseball be as invested in that as the players are going to be.
Yeah, and Buster, you made a really good point. We have to start to repair the two sides here because the contentious nature of the owners against the players is not good right now, and it has to get significantly better if we're going to avoid a work stoppage in 2022. And this is one of those issues, service time, that has really rankled the players, and an adjustment's going to have to be made here if we're going to get anywhere in the next CBA.
All right, give me a team that you feel like, as you begin to get your first look at some of these teams, that's going to surprise us in 2021.
Okay, I don't think they're making the playoffs, certainly not in a five-teamer, but the Royals are better than people think. Yep. And I really like what they've done with Carlos Santana, bringing him in. Now they can take Hunter Dozier and move him to third base, which gives them, you know, some pop at the corners. I like what they've done in the back of the bullpen with Wade Davis and Greg Holland. Maybe they don't have anything left, but they're going for it at least to say these guys have been successful here. I like what they've done in the rotation. Mike Minor's going to help with some things. They're not a great team, but they're going to be better than people think. I think they still, you know, people hook them with the Tigers and say, that's a really weak division. I'm not so sure anymore. I really like how the Royals have tried to, you know, in bits and pieces, in a relatively inexpensive way, brought more major league talent into their team. And I think they're a team that could be much better than people think.
And by the way, when we talk about teams deploying non-competitive behavior, Dayton Moore will be able to finish his time as the general manager of the Kansas City Royals whenever that happens and know that, you know what, we didn't do that. We tried to do the best we could within our market size, and we tried to put competitive teams on the field. Yes?
Yes, and, you know, he got killed for hanging on to Lorenzo Cain for too long and hanging on to that, you know, to that the key parts of the team, but that was loyalty, and Dayton Moore is the most loyal man I think I've ever met in baseball. These guys helped us win a World Series. We're gonna try to win one more with them. So I think he's doing it the right way right now, and he will keep his head high that we may not have won all the time, but we did things the right way, and everyone in baseball knows that about Dayton Moore and the Royals.
And conducted the relationship between the teams and the players with absolute good faith. Give me a team that's going to be worse than expected, because you know I like to go negative from time to time.
Yeah. All right, you help me with this, Buster, but I've thought about it too. The Mariners are in a difficult division, I believe, still. I think the Angels are going to be better than they were last year. I think the A's have taken a step back, but with the way they rebuilt their bullpen a little bit, they're still really good. And the Astros are better than people think also, I believe, with bringing back Michael Brantley and doing some other things. They're starting pitching, I think, is deceptively good even without Justin Verlander. So the point is the Mariners are in a difficult division in my mind. They're the fourth best team in that division. And I understand they have some young players on the way up, and they've got some good things going for them. That outfield in 2 years is going to be spectacular with Rodriguez, Kelnick, and Lewis. It's going to be really fun to watch. However, Buster, what they've been through here now, this latest thing with the club president, you can't discount what that's going to do to the inner workings of that team. And it's not going to be, okay, it's us against them now. I don't think it's going to work that way. I think it's going to be a distraction that is going to hurt that club to some degree. I'm just not sold they're ready to make the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. And I've heard people say they are. I'm not buying it for today.
No. And think about the difficult decision in the front office. Kelnick has a great spring training. This is someone who, you know, had basically hasn't been above Class A for very long. If he has a great spring training, the issue that that's going to create for the front office, if they want to try to slow play the development of these guys, it could turn into an absolute mess.
Now, real quickly,
Kelnick has demonstrated he's willing to talk out loud about it.
Right, and good for him. And real quickly, the Mariners didn't want Ken Griffey Jr. to make the team his first full camp years and years and years ago. They said he wasn't ready. And they put him in against every difficult left-handed pitcher in the Cactus League in spring training saying, well, he will fail, and then we'll have a reason to send him back. And he hit everybody, and he didn't fail, and he had a great rookie year. Let's hope for their sake something similar happens with Jared Kelnick.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. Have fun this week.
Okay, thanks, Buster. I'll talk to you soon.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code baseball. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Here's Trey Mancini speaking with reporters on Zoom after the Orioles exhibition.
You know, all day, just kind of been running through the last year and you know, everything that me and Sarah and my family have been through. You know, it's almost a year to the day. I think a couple days off from when I was last in a game. So definitely was a moment where I felt like it kind of came full circle a little bit. And like I said, I thought more about everything that happened today than I have in a long time. I've mostly tried to, in a lot of ways, just move on and not think too much about last year. But, you know, I ran through all the tough days that we had and you know, I really tried to appreciate and cherish today, and I definitely did that and almost teared up a little bit. I'm not going to lie, when I was up there and, you know, everybody gave me a standing ovation and, you know, I saw the guys on the field clapping on the Pirates and in their dugout and of course, our team and all our fans, and it meant the world to me. So, yeah, it was a really, really cool moment and one of my favorite moments of my baseball career. And yeah, I think it was a huge day for me personally, getting back in a game and yeah, just another kind of milestone that I can check off here.
Paul Severino is the play-by-play man for the Marlins on television. And Paul, I always say that Dan Patrick came out of the womb to be a TV broadcaster. Like when you talk to him, you can't imagine him being anything other than that. Having done a lot of shows with Carl Ravitch, I feel the same way. Like there's just something natural about it. And for you, you were born in Bristol, Connecticut. As I was getting ready for this, I was like, wow. So there had to have been a time early in your life when it popped into your brain, like, I want to be a broadcaster.
You know, I wish it was as great of a story.
Really?
Honestly, it was, yeah, no, it was really just my own laziness and not really wanting to do anything else. Like I was like, oh, you know, I like watching sports and everything else. And I was probably 7, 8, 9, 10 years old or something. And I had an older friend who was getting ready for high school and college and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to go into communications. I said, what's that? He goes, well, you know, those guys that talk on TV during a game. And I was like, wait a second. Like those are actual human beings. I never thought about that. Yeah. I was like, I'll do that. I get to sleep in every day. I get to watch sports. Like, yeah, that sounds like a pretty decent job. And then like growing up in Bristol, you know, I certainly having worked at ESPN for 5 years, I respect what all you guys do in front of the camera, behind the camera, all kinds of stuff. But I guess I was never intimidated by it in a sense, only because like when I was, again, 10, 11, 12 years old, we'd go on every summer at summer camp, we'd take a tour. And I remember bumping into Stuart Scott in the hallways and being able to see the studios when I was a young kid. It was like, it was kind of like the TV station down the street for me. I used to drive by the satellite dishes on the way to Lake Compounce all the time. So it was like, oh yeah, that's cool. It's just that big building down the street. And then, you know, as I got older and got a chance to appreciate it more working there, it certainly got bigger, but there was not always that intimidation factor, I guess, maybe.
As there was for me coming from a town of 400 people in central Vermont. And the first time I went on Sports Center in studio, my heart rate was about 270. I didn't know you had been there like 60 times by the time I walked into the studio. So I totally get that. All right. With the Marlins, what changed last year in your mind?
I think it's, it wasn't so much like, I think the results changed last year, but I think that the mindset and the attitude is something that had kind of been building along with, the roster and the farm system and all kinds of stuff. I think that there was a belief, in, of course, Derek Jeter, who had been a winner throughout his playing career, that he didn't need to do this, right? Like he could have been doing many other things. He's got a beautiful young family. He didn't have to spend his days and his weeks and his years doing ownership stuff. Like he could have done anything else. So he was going to do this and he was going to succeed. And I think that from early on in his reign, I guess, if you will, as owner and the rest of that group, was that they were going to turn it around, and he still will not put a timetable on, you know, where by 2021 or by 2022 we'll be World Series champions. But it's been a process, and it's been fun to watch, and you can see it. My first year was 18, and I think they lost 98 games in 2018, and it was a brutal would be a word, right? But oddly enough, the following year in 19, they lost more games, but I think you can make a case that they were more competitive, and you could start to see it then that they were not going to give up under Don Mattingly, right? So in 2018, they'd be down 5-1 after the first inning, and then they'd lose 13-2. But in 2019, they'd be down 5-1 in the first inning, and maybe they'd come back and win the game, or maybe they would have the tying run on base in the ninth inning. There was just a lot more competitiveness there in 19. And then obviously, you know, last year was great in terms of all the results that they had and were able to get over the hump a little bit, get back to the postseason, have an over 500 record for the first time in a while. So it was fun to watch. Maybe unexpected for a lot of people outside the organization, but I think that those that, you know, have been around it and seen it every day kind of saw it coming.
So in 1993, I covered the San Diego Padres, who lost 101 games. And just in talking with friends, I'd say, boy, you know, they've got this really great young reliever that you should know about, Trevor Hoffman. And like, he's a hard thrower. And that was before he developed this changeup that got him the Hall of Fame. As you sit and watch this team and you talk with friends or you watch idiots like me talk about the Marlins, who do you think that we should have a greater awareness of, a young player who really hasn't burst onto the national stage yet?
Geez, how long do you have? I mean, how long can we chat? I mean, honestly, that's kind of where we're at. I mean, I could list off, two or three guys. I mean, I think Sixto's obviously made his name, his presence felt a little bit, obviously in what could be a full season for him. He'll be a lot of fun to watch and the adjustments that he'll make. But that's the thing. I mean, again, when my first year was 18, like I said, and they had in the years prior had the worst farm systems, depending on the scouting service that you look at. And now they're up in the top five, depending on where you look at. So there's so many guys. I mean, J.J. Bleda on Sunday hit a home run. I get it. It's the first game of spring training, but he's a really advanced hitter. We might see him at some point this year in the big leagues. Edward Cabrera, who's shut down right now, might be their top prospect, again, depending on what scouting service you're looking at. In terms of pitching, he and Sixto, you keep kind of hearing it that those two guys in the years to come may be the one and two on the staff. And there's just so many guys, Max Meyer, who they picked in the first round last year. I mean, again, I can go on and on, but I would fear leaving some guys out. So, I guess I'll stop at three, but the point being is that there's a lot more in the coffers right now. And I think that was honestly one of the reasons why they were able to, do what they were able to do last year was because of that organizational depth. Sure, they went out and they made a deal for Richard Blyer from Baltimore, a veteran, or picked up James Hoyt from Cleveland last year. They went out and they made some moves, but at the same time, they were able to reach down in their farm system and find some guys who were close, you know, in a normal year, may have gotten a cup of coffee or whatever. But, you know, I think last year they were called upon to step up and, you know, for the most part, guys did in their own little ways. I mean, even though we'd love to see a guy like Monte Harrison, who's a tremendous athlete, might be their best outfielder in their organization, you know, be a little bit more consistent at the plate. That's not to say that he didn't play a major role last year late in the season. I mean, he was their pinch runner du jour and was just so exciting on the bases. So even though he might not have shown those five tools, talent, skills that he might possess, you know, he was able to find his niche, find his role, and really excel at it. And everybody was doing their part last year, and that's why they were able to do what they did.
It's not a done deal. I don't think that we're only going to have a 10-team playoff field this year. You know, I've been told by people on both sides, look, it potentially could pop up again before the start of the regular season, which I think it would be great for a team like the Marlins, as it was last year, to open up. Especially because the National League East is so competitive. It's the best division in baseball, as Bryce Harper said to reporters yesterday. In your mind, what has to happen for this Marlins team to compete with the Braves and the Mets and the Nationals, the Phillies?
Yeah, I think it starts with pitching. I think that was their strength going into last year. I think that will be their strength again this year. And it goes for 30 teams. You know, how do starting pitchers from last year, whether it's a guy like Clayton Kershaw, who's been around forever, or a guy like Sandy Alcantara, who's really had one full season, how do they manage going from the 2019 season where they're around 200 innings to last year where the guys are around, you know, 40, 50 innings, whatever the number might be, and then rev it back up to whatever, 180, 220 innings, somewhere in that range. Every team has that question. But again, I think that if they can pitch and if they can compete, you know, they're, you know, I don't want to sound condescending, but they're scrappy enough on offense that they might not, you know, I said this on the air last year, they are not the type of team that's going to average 9 runs a game and just assume that they're going to score 9 runs a game. But they are the type of team that could figure out a way to score a run an inning. And that would add up to 9. You know what I'm saying? So they have that ability. They're not going to live and die on the 3-run home run, I don't think. But if they can figure out ways to get guys on base, they've got a lot of speed, a lot of athleticism that they can create runs. And I think that I think that's kind of the mindset. They've had to change the mindset a little bit and say, let's win an inning, you know, instead of going out there, let's win the game tonight, let's win an inning. And I think that they do that 9 times a night, then they're going to be okay.
We saw what happened with the Seattle Mariners last week. And of course the conversation about non-competitive behavior, service time and manipulation has been going on around baseball. You know, Tim Kirchner and I just talked about how the Royals and under Dayton Moore have never done that. You know, they've always acted in good faith. And as I got ready to talk to you and thinking about J.J. Bleda as an interesting guy, potential promotion to the big leagues, I thought, you know, knowing Derek, having covered Derek, I can't imagine he would be doing anything other than, you know what, let's just put the best players on the field with a team that we feel like is a collection of players who push their way to the big leagues.
Absolutely. And he has said that for probably as long as he's been the owner down here. And it's always been about that. It's been about figuring out who are the best 26 guys that are going to help us on a daily basis. And I think that what's also good is that there is a really healthy competition. I'm just as excited as anybody to watch J.J. Bleda every day in the big leagues. But the Marlins have they've got some outfield depth right now, so he's going to have to earn it, you know. And I think that he certainly has the potential to do that. But you got a guy like Starling Marte and Corey Dickerson, two true professionals out there, and Adam Duvall is going to see some time. And you know, the question of is Garrett Cooper going to be out in right field, and Lewis Brinson and Magnery Sierra. I mean, they're deep before you get to a guy like JJ. And I think that. I'm not drawing up the roster or telling you who's going to be on the opening day squad or anything, but you know, I think that it would probably be, if I'm taking an educated guess, it'd probably be one of those things where unless he's got a great spring, hits 450 with 12 home runs in the spring, he could probably benefit from getting back into game action again. I mean, he was, you know, maybe last year, if it was a normal season, may have seen a little bit of big league action toward the end of the year. But the way that the world got turned upside down, it was really just alternate site stuff for him all year. So I think I would imagine that with no major league experience, it'd probably be a situation where, unless it's a tremendous spring, that he'd probably benefit from being wherever he might start, double A, triple A, something like that.
All right, Paul. Well, thanks for doing this. I'll be watching.
I will too. Pleasure to talk to you.
Bleacher Tweets.
I love that. More bird sounds. Reggie Deal, a faithful listener, sent that in. And we'd love to hear your other bird sounds. Last week, we started off with bird sounds. It's right around the corner, only 3 weeks away from officially hitting spring. Bleacher Tweets for today. I'm stepping in. For Taylor, as he deals with these wisdom teeth, the wisdom teeth fallout, I should say. This is from Kevin Lark at KLark24. Hey, guys, is there any chance the Reds have a chance in the National League Central? They made the playoffs last year, but it seems like a fluke as their offense is uninspiring. I do think it's going to be a stretch. The one thing that potentially keeps them in play, nobody really besides the Cardinals adding Nolan Arenado did anything in the National League Central. You know, the Cubs selling off. Teams reducing payroll, teams holding their payroll in place, not very aggressive. John Buell at JBuell19, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. What move this offseason made you ask yourself why? Mine is either the Cardinals declining Wong's option or the Marlins signing Duvall. I actually like the signing of Adam Duvall. I'm not totally convinced, as some other people are, like Carl Ravitch seems very skeptical that we're actually going to have a designated hitter in the National League this year. I think eventually Major League Baseball and the Players Association will come to some sort of a last-minute agreement. I agree with you, John. The Cardinals declining Colton Wong's option, that was confusing to me in a one-year obligation. Jakey Jake asks, he's at Jake YRS79. People seem happy for Alex Cora. You and Carl seem to love Carlos Correa, and people were psyched for George Springer to sign his new contract. Is the Astros cheating scandal officially over and forgotten? I never even got to boo. It's not over. I don't really have a problem separating. Like, I've known Carlos Correa since he was playing in the minor leagues. And, you know, known George Springer. I think they're both great guys. I've obviously known Alex Cora for a long time. Went to college with his brother, Joey. And I can separate it. Where, on one hand, you can say, we feel like those guys are good guys. And on the other hand, yes, they participated in that. And yes, they paid a price. And yes, the legacy of the 2017 Astros is always going to be affected. All right, tomorrow we'll start the American League Central previews now that we're done with the National League East. And thanks today to Paul Severino, to Tim, to Taylor. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on race and skin color is something that we should fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.